is Austin welcoming you to the LL Research Radio program In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is Tuesday, April 15th, 2014. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew in the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for the Rock Contact, and president of LL Research. Gary and I, devoted seekers of the Law of One, manage LL from the home office. LL Research is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and towards this end has two websites, the archive website llresearch.org and the community website bringforth.org. Together they offer over 1,300 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you would like to ask us a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on the air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LLresearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Austin, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. Is everybody with us and ready to go?
We're ready.
I am here.
Live and ready.
All right. We'll go ahead and jump into the opening riff before going to questions. Today's opening riff comes from a Kuo transcript from October 16th, 2010. Families are a wonderful source of service to others' opportunities. Certainly, there are times when caring for one whose mind is failing seems too much to bear. And we encourage all of those that are in this position to honor the self at those times and release responsibility, so that the self may be healed in order to heal, restored in order to restore, consoled in order to console. And if the one who restores and heals and loves the self is the self, then so be it. For you are capable of healing, loving, and restoring yourself. You are the creator, and you may choose the manner of your creation. We encourage the energy of forgiveness in this situation for the other and for the self.
Thank you, Austin. Even though this one seems to be a little bit specialized, the first sentence is what snagged me. Families are a wonderful source of service to others' opportunities. It was probably a couple of hours ago, maybe 2.5 hours ago, that my husband and I, the one known as Jim, otherwise known as himself, were attempting to finalize our taxes. Jim was having a fit. I was attempting to remember that it's important to forgive. Pulled out of the fit long enough to function in fits and starts, and we get the taxes finalized, the taxes checks written, the checks in the envelopes sealed, delivered. And meanwhile, Jim has totally taken the wind out of my sails by thanking me up one side and down the other. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. I am feeling very, very guilty. And I say, think nothing of it, because really, I had so many mean thoughts about Jim having a fit that I had completely ruined any hope of taking credit for my good deeds. And that's the way service to others works. It isn't pretty. It isn't flowery. It isn't something that has Disney music behind it. It's often the stuff of difficulty and holding yourself together and invoking forgiveness over and over and over again. While someone with whom you're interacting does things that you'd rather he didn't do, behaves in ways you'd rather he didn't behave. You don't have any control over other people. All you have control over is your response. And I completely believe that it's all right to think as long as you don't let them out from between your teeth. Because you have to have some outlet for the shadow side, which is going to be wanting to react to the other shadow side. But it's not a good idea to react to that shadow side. It's a good idea to forgive. Now, I have not been in the situation of having to deal with a person whose mind is failing. The person that was asking this question obviously was. Excuse me. I know people who have, and I guess we all do. It's a very tough situation. The person that you depended on, the person that is your mom, your pop, your dad, all of a sudden are making no sense whatsoever. They're forgetting to do those things, and their affairs are going happily to Hades in a handbasket. And so you have to step in and somehow pull their affairs together for them. It's so painful to have that change from mom or dad to child. But that's the situation. And once you get that under your belt, you're far better off. My husband was in that situation recently, and he did a magnificent job. He did an epic job. It was as though all of the angels in heaven were on his side, and everything he tried to do unbelievably well, so that he was able to accomplish the things that he needed to do in the time he had to do it, which would have seemed impossible looking at it from the beginning. He sold a house, got every piece of paper placed and oriented that was in the house, removed all the contents of that house, and got it ready for sale. And he placed his mom in a care home, having done all the research he could. It's a very small town. There wasn't much research to do as to which one was the best. 2 weeks he had done all of those things. He had control of his mother's financial affairs, including signing all paperwork needed. He was square with the IRS. That is, she was square with the IRS. With the bank. And with anybody else that demanded that he sign things. There was always a lot of people that want you to sign things when you take on the care of another human being. Now, there was a certain amount of trickery involved in the fact that he sort of finagled her into the home. She never quite figured out that she was going to stay there forever until she discovered that he had placed her contents of bedroom and living room in her new apartment in the new place, and he introduced her to her new home. And all she ever said to him was, "You tricked me." And he said, "Yes, I did. I'm sorry. It was necessary." And she nodded. That was all she ever said about it. He's never heard another word about it. I think she's forgotten. She's losing that capability that people have to remember things like that. Except that she tells him often that she's happy there. So she remembers in some way she needs to reassure him. There's something there, even if she doesn't remember what. He got off easy to other friends of mine, the Hutts. Her mother and father both went bonkers at the same time. And they just lost control of their affairs. They didn't have a hand on the reins anymore, and she discovered that she desperately needed to go take over. She did not want to. It was so hard for her. She was very close to her mom. And, you know, you're able to to pretend and to make believe that things are still okay. You want them to be okay, but they're not. And finally, she had to admit that and go take control of the situation, which she did. But it was so hard for her. It was so painful. It was agonizing. And they remembered fully enough to be angry with her. They did not want to go into a care home. And they had to, because they weren't remembering their medicine. They weren't remembering to take baths. They weren't remembering any of the things that you need to do to cope personally and financially. They needed somebody to take those things over. She could take over the financials. She could not take over personal care. She did not live anywhere near them. She had to get a home for them. They wanted to stay. They were very clear that they wanted just where they were. So it was just a matter of doing what Jim did, finding the best place and getting them put in there. Whether they wanted to or not, it had to be done. They were so angry with her for so long. They did finally forgive her and ended up thanking her. Not easy. Loving somebody else seems like a wonderful thing when you're in love. You're young, you're happy, you're carefree. All of your life is before you. And you get into it, you become a married couple. Whether or not you start a family, you find yourself taking on responsibilities. And before you know it, and you are in a different place than you were as a young person, carefree and romantic and in love. You may still be in love, But that love has to stand the buffeting of the winds of interpersonal relationships, of the things that happen to us, getting jobs, losing jobs, finding homes, losing homes, all that. It's all ahead. And I look at people that are young enough to be carefree and able to do what they want. But who are planning to, and I think towards the years to come. And I hope that everything works out beautifully for them, always. But I know that everything won't. I know that they will find themselves inevitably because of their relationships. As much as ever they loved, they will suffer. And I don't mean that in a mean way. I mean that with all love and compassion. It's what happens to human beings. If they love, they will suffer. And that's okay, because suffering brings us to all of our choices. Discomfort brings us to choice point. And the choice point always has a high road. You can remember to take the high road. Every time, they will be fine. Regardless of how much they suffer, they will be fine. Certainly, Jim and I are 30 years into a relationship. And we are fine. But we have suffered. And we will again. It's what you do when you love. Which brings us to Kuo's other reminder. We encourage the energy of forgiveness for the other and for the self. Generally, the suffering is nobody's fault. It's the nature of life. So be it. It's worth everything. It's worth it all. I'm here to tell you. 70 years old and loving every minute of it. And more. It's delightful. It's wonderful. But I'm not going to stand here and say it doesn't include suffering. Because, darling, it does. It always will. It's the way we learn. It's the way we grow. Somebody was talking to me today, earlier, a nurse, a visiting nurse, about trying to heal this hole in my back that is so stubborn. She says, you need to irritate it. Not just once, but again and again. You need to irritate that wound in order to get it to heal, in order to get it to work. That's the nature. It's in our cells. It's bred in our bones. We suffer in order to heal. We suffer in order to become whole. And that too is a blessing and a gift. Amen.
Questions now. Our first question coming from user Folklove on the Bring Forth forums. Folklove asks, What do you think of our current justice system? Is it more reflective of humanity's shadow side or positive side? Is justice really being served when a criminal, take a murderer for example, is locked behind bars? Or are his accusers simply reacting from their shadow side? I understand that we are talking about a huge range of individuals and circumstances, but surely there is a more compassionate way of dealing with such people than locking them up and throwing away the key, which is what seems to happen mostly. Is there hope for everyone, or do some people simply need to be separated from society? Who would like to take on that one first? I love this question. It's a great question.
It is a great question. And I understand that Gary has found a quote from Ra to start with.
I was assisting Austin. I think Austin has it in front of him.
Okay. I'll start us off with that. This question needs a little context. Don and Ra are discussing unintentional enslavement on our current third density sphere. And Don asks, I would like to say that a very high percentage of the laws and restrictions within what we call our legal system are of a nature of enslavement of which I just spoke. Would you agree with this? And Ra says, it is a necessary balance to the intention of law, which is to protect, that the result would encompass an equal distortion towards imprisonment. Therefore, we may say that your supposition is correct. This is not to denigrate those who, in green and blue-ray energies, sought to free a peaceable peoples from the bonds of chaos, but only to point out the inevitable consequences of codification of response, which does not recognize the uniqueness of each and every situation within your experience. And that is dealing with a slightly specific topic, but it can be applied in general to the justice system, especially that last part, where Ra talks about the consequences of the codification of response, which is essentially what we have as a justice system now, is laws are laws, and if you break a law, you get this punishment.
Because of the way money works in this society, if you have enough money, you can remove the sting from almost anything, even murder. I'm thinking of O.J. Simpson. Everybody had the really strong feeling that he was guilty. And yet he hired the best defense lawyers, the slipperiest, oiliest defense lawyers that were on the planet, speaking English at this time, and slid out somehow on reasonable doubt. And I think most wealthy people do slide out at whatever level they're in trouble. They're given a nod and a wink because of preferential treatment or money changes hands because of blackmail. What it comes down to, I mean, that's not a pretty name for it, but that's sort of the way insinuation works when people talk about, okay, if you pursue this, this is what will happen to you. And then they have something that you don't want to happen to you. Even, you know, the most stringent attempts to be fair will not result in fairness. We have to face the fact that that's just the truth, that we see it all the time. Now, I don't think that people that are defense lawyers and people that are responsible for creating the laws are unaware of this. I think that they try their best to stay idealistic for the sake of the law, for the sake of, you know, trying to make the law something they can love, make it something that they can give their lives to. I think it's very hard on good men to see, you know, their good intentions blocked. But that's just the way it is. And tried to wiggle around putting people in jail all kinds of ways. Both Georgia and Australia were populated mostly by so-called criminals, which were mostly people that were too poor to buy bread, and when were found stealing bread or, you know, some equivalent theft like that, where they needed it to feed their families. They needed food for their families. And so whether it was in the 16th century and they were stealing loaves of bread, or in the 21st century and they were stealing bologna in the package from the 7-Eleven, it comes to the same thing. They're trying to feed their families. And they get caught, and all of a sudden they're criminals. You know, they've committed a felony. And they go into jail, and maybe they're young and they haven't ever gotten afoul of the law in any way, shape, or form before. But once they're in prison, they rub up against all kinds of people who have been criminals for a long time and know all the ins and outs of being criminals. And being criminal is a way of life for those who come in and out of the justice system and don't worry about it one way or the other. If they're in jail, fine. They don't have to worry about food. If they're not in jail, fine. They'll practice their profession, whether it's, you know, stealing or murder or whatever. And another good young person becomes aware of another way of thinking. And it's very attractive to one who is down and out. It's a way I can not just survive, but thrive. And so, you know, another one gets turned to the dark side, as we would say from Star Wars.
You're talking about good men being sort of fighting an uphill battle in the justice system, or...
Yeah, I'm trying to describe people trying desperately to make good laws.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter what, they're going to be gotten around.
It reminds me of a good friend of ours who's come to the past couple of homecomings, who practiced as a defense attorney in California, who had some pretty sort of chilling examples of his attempts to show compassion in his job, to appeal to compassionate sides of judges and other lawyers, and who was he was essentially mocked for attempting to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in the system just basically crushes that sort of spirit out of anybody who tries to go in with positive intentions. It's a very negative sort of system where it's not a system which humanizes anybody. It's extremely strict, extremely stringent, extremely codified. The difference, there's a concept, or the justice system we have now would be called a retributive justice system, which is at odds with another concept called a restorative justice system.
Mm-hmm.
These are two forms of justice, or legal systems, I should say, because our friend that I was just talking about he likes to call it the legal system and not the justice system, because he does not feel like justice is necessarily served in our current
mm-hmm.
system. But there's some major differences in that the retributive justice system believes that a crime should be punished, and that punishment and threats of punishment deter crime, which there is a lot of evidence, even official studies, to show that this is not true at all. Like you were just describing, Carla, the prison system is sort of a revolving door where somebody who might just be a little misguided or might even just be trying to survive gets caught doing so and then gets thrown in this environment, which if you know anybody that works directly with prisoners or works within a prison system, you know that the prisons, the way they're set up and the way that the guards actually encourage the system to work is extremely negative, almost uncannily similar to how one would imagine Ra describing a very service-to-self system working. You can't really be an open person. You have to have a very strong suit of armor. You have to learn how to work the system and manipulate people and manipulate the system. There's very tribal attitudes, and you learn a lot. You become an expert at very negative tactics to thrive, and then you go back out into the world, and that's basically what you've known for your life, for however long you were in prison. And so some people are able to take that experience and turn it around and be positive, but for the most part, they call it a revolving door. It just keeps cycling people through and creating more and more criminals through the prison system,
mm-hmm.
which is
recidivism.
Mm-hmm. And
once you get in, you're going to go in again.
Right. And it's sort of reinforced by our privatized prison system, where prisons are now run by corporations that are out to make a profit. They are public corporations, which have a legal obligation due to our economic system to make a profit. And so they want more criminals. More criminals for them means more money. And so it's reinforced by our economic system itself. And so what the restorative justice system is a alternate view at how crime should be handled. Instead of focusing on the criminal and focusing on punishment, it's a focus on any harm that was done by a crime and an attempt to heal it, either whether it's healing the victim, healing any damages that were done, or healing the actual criminal themselves. The retributive justice system focuses crime as an individual act with individual responsibility, when the restorative justice system realizes that crime has both an individual and social dimension of responsibility, where, you know, our people don't just become criminals in a vacuum. There's a system at work that sort of creates criminals. People are responsible for their own actions, of course, but if people weren't turned to crime, as you were describing, Carla, and out of necessity, or born into an environment where crime is a regular thing, a way to survive, then they wouldn't be criminals necessarily. There's a focus on solving the problem instead of a focus on establishing blame or guilt, instead of having a long, drawn-out process trying to pin guilt onto an individual and basically putting the victim to the side and putting this person who is harmed to the side, where they're not even really a part of the process.
Right.
There's a focus on the crime itself and the individual who purported the crime or committed the crime. The victim is sort of forgotten. There's no healing. There's sometimes, you know, monetary reimbursement, but money doesn't heal.
Very seldom.
And there's no healing for the victim or any sort of damage that was done in the act of the crime. So, and if we look at criminals, we take a deeper look, as Ra would encourage us to do in our third density environment, to understand where they're coming from, understand what biases they may be carrying with them through their life experiences. A lot of the time we might realize that they are coming from a place where they themselves were harmed and they are unable to access a compassionate side because our system has sort of been perpetuating their harm throughout their lifetime, and so then they project it onto others and they carry on a system of harm, and instead of the victim or the criminal being healed from their own harm, their own damage, they are punished, and it might damage them even more. And it's just a cyclical system that kind of never ends. And so I would say to folk love that our current legal system is definitely not reflective of a positive side of humanity, but it is supported by many people who do hold on to the idea that punishment is a proper response to any sort of wrongdoing. That's a reason why a lot of people hold on to the idea of heaven or hell, because some people cannot let go of the idea that if you do something wrong, you must be punished. And there's no compassion necessarily for the person who is committing the crime.
Yeah, that's exactly, you pinpoint exactly the problem. And compassion is the word that's missing from the justice system, and a substitute codification, and it's a shame. But what are you going to do? I mean, you have to hold the bounds of society within certain limits. That's almost, I would say, a given,
mm-hmm.
because otherwise there are riots, there's chaos. Tribes take over the planet. We don't want that.
Mm-hmm. I definitely think the legal system is necessary, and some criminals may not be able to be healed. It might be sort of inherent in who they are.
It could be a useless attempt that people... do-gooders, as they're called, are silly to try.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to know until you try, really? And I know people that are in prisons trying to make a difference. I know one fella, Charlie Jim, who has had a long history of spending an hour a week in prisons with anybody that wanted to listen, talking about Christ and reading from the Bible and witnessing to the beauty of the Christian life. And he has had some successes. He has had some notable successes. He has had some career criminals turn completely around. So you never know. You absolutely never know.
Mm-hmm.
And people are grand for trying to do that. And Charlie must be made of Teflon, because he is still doing it after all these years. And he is still a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Good on you, Charlie. We're going to spend the hour on this question. I can see that.
I think so. Gary or Jim, did you have anything to add?
I'd really like to hear what you have to say, Mickey.
I think there are a lot of people that make wonderful efforts, like you just mentioned about Charlie, who can heal situations, individuals, and offer opportunities for compassionate responses to people's behaviors. But it seems like the problem goes a lot deeper than that. We have so many criminals. We have people we put in jail. We have a huge jail population in the United States, and I think around the world is probably just about the same. And I think it has to do with the economic system and how we value our time and what we see of value. When Ra talked about the Egyptian culture that allowed the Nile to overflow frequently in order to get the soil nurtured by what the river could bring and crops could grow and so forth, that the barter system that was developed then was more effective, actually, in keeping a positive frame of mind, you might say, a positive attitude about humanity by humanity. And when it was changed over to the monetary system, then it was a distancing of the view that people took upon themselves and upon everyone, that we became more of, not, I'm
I'm talking about the barter system where we had bartered before?
Yeah, there was barter before, and then things got worse when we went to a monetary system because, and this is my supposition here, Rob just mentioned that in general that the barter system was much more compassionate than the monetary system, and various problems come from that. And I think that the reason the problems come from the monetary system we have now, capitalism basically around the world, is that you win the game by using people. And it's just like Monopoly. You learn how to maximize the profit in the bottom line by utilizing your resources most effectively. And one of the most important resources for any large business that wants, you know, we are pointed toward large businesses, multinational corporations. The way they do that is to use the labor force as an ingredient and try to pay the labor force as little as possible. So, you know, in the early days of capitalism in this country, there was a strong union movement that came up so that the workers could see their rights realized in this exchange of energies. And it's still something going on today that we don't value the rights of the workers, the rights of people, as much as we value what we can get out of them. And I think that's basically it. And so looking at the system we've got now, we're probably stuck with it. And the compassionate actions are going to have to come on individual levels. That it's we're not likely to give up the capitalistic system, but people can make an individual effort to reach out to others that may be a victim or that may be the perpetrator, and to try to get some more compassionate means of dealing with both. And just like you said, Carla, in the opening riff, that family is the greatest source of catalyst and greatest place to use it. This is the stuff of third density. This is the stuff of confusion, the stuff of trying to wend our way through the illusion with this tiny little light of consciousness that we shine out of our desire. And so that's basically it. I don't see any really great solutions coming in the time left. It's just going to have to be individual efforts and learning how to love the unlovable, which I think is the second question.
How about you, Gary?
I'm for the principle of law. I think without it, that there's a tendency, at least in this world, for the strong to prey on the weak,
mm-hmm.
or the strong to rule arbitrarily. I mean, in principle, the law is supposed to apply equally to everybody, though, as you guys have noted, that's not so much the case. Historically, from what little I understand, our current legal system, at least in the Western world or First World nations, is better than it has been historically. It's probably a better time to be a prisoner now than at most other times and most other cultures in the past. And in being for the rule of law, I think that, at least given our circumstances, some people probably should be separated at minimum from society. If you show a proclivity to murder or rape or some kind of grievous harm to somebody else or potentially even their property, then it may be best that you be removed from society so that you can't harm society and society can't be harmed by you. But I think there's a lot to be said for the type of distinction that Austin drew between the restorative and the punitive
mm-hmm.
systems. I think we have a sort of Old Testament-esque sort of system that
smites people.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. You've done wrong, and this is your punishment, and then end of story. Not much energy there for rehabilitation, per se. And then in that sort of situation, prisoners are shunned, and there's little compassion for them from society. And I'm not saying it's easy to love an individual that has legitimately done some of the harmful things that certain prisoners. others have done. But in general, I would say there's little compassion. And even in a lot of cases, or in a certain way, it's turned into entertainment. Most of us have access or knowledge about the prison system through TV series or movies that use that portray and make theater of that sort of situation.
Heinlein, Robert Heinlein, the science fiction writer of the 40s and the 50s, not much liked anymore, but I've always liked his work. Proposed in one of his books not just taking them from one place and putting them in another, but taking them from a free society and putting them in a society that had been designed and was run by the worst of the criminals. And some people liked it there, and they didn't want to come back. And they didn't have to. They were sent there, and the system basically spat out the good guys who were not going to go to the dark side, and said, here, this person isn't really a criminal. I'm sorry, you have to take him. We can't do anything with him. Because, you know, there are certain people that are useless to criminals, the constant and everlasting patsy basically ends up being useless, and so you spit him out, and you send him back to the good guys because there's nothing wrong with him except that he's weak and helpless. And he's in line for some healing. So I always thought that Heinlein's suggestion had merit. And if we had, you know, the sense to ask the criminals to create a society along the lines that they would like, instead of bars, just make it, you know, every place from Ohio west to Nebraska would be criminal land. And there would just be a line of guardians along the state lines that would keep one group from impinging on another. And instead of assigning, you know, numbers of years of service behind bars, you just put them in the other place and let them work it out. It has a certain amount of appeal to me because there's a certain amount of freedom in the kind of place that Heinlein imagined, created, that would allow for the truly crazy people to go scot-free. So all you had to do was be crazy. And you were free, and you got to do whatever you wanted and not be bothered either by the good guys or the bad guys. I loved it.
That is definitely the stuff of science fiction. Great material for sci-fi. The penal colony may be an approximation of that, but the major flaw in that sort of idea is what Austin hit on, and I think kind of what you touched on too, Carla, but especially Austin, how the system perpetuates and breeds and trains criminals, and that it creates, and this was also echoed by Lorena Lucille, who headed our prison ministry for 5 years and had intensive correspondence with prisoners. Her conclusion was that prison was a very service-to-self environment. And Ra talks about the power of the environment in the Law of One. Don's asking about planets polarizing. if they go purely positive, purely negative, in between. And Ra indicates that once a certain basically critical mass of negativity is reached, it's almost impossible for the positive entity to polarize positively because the environment is like a gravity that sucks that entity in, and you're going negative whether you like it or not. It's hard to retain that positive polarity. Likewise, I don't know that the degree is equivalent, but likewise for prisons, in a very service-to-self environment, is going to, even if you enter as a positive individual, it's going to be hard to hold on. You can, it's possible, certainly, but it's going to be hard to hold on to that positive polarity. But people do, and people certainly go in negative, and this speaks to one aspect of the question. Is there any hope? People go into prison environments and certainly have a transformative experience, have finally the space and this time and the circumstance that forces themselves to reflect.
To be stronger than anything else except their own thinking.
Yeah, and to reflect on what they've done, who they've been, and to dig down into their psyche and find the motivations that led to that particular act, and then to realize that it wasn't the highest choice, and to begin the process of forgiveness, and however that works for the individual, seeking, if at all possible, to make amends to the victim. But there's so much that's wrong, I would say, with our current system. I think it's reflective of our world, of a world of, in the minority, mixed polarity, but in the majority, non-polarity. And thus, it's our system of crime and punishment is symptomatic of the confusion and the distortions of our society. Like Jim said, I don't think that on a...
So you would say that it's reflective both of the shadow side and the positive side, that it's a little of both and confused about it.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely a hugely mixed bag, and even more so a non-polarized bag. I don't know if I can
say
that accurately.
This is the cusp of the guy's question was, what do you know, is it reflective of humanity's shadow side or positive side? Well, obviously, it's reflective of the positive side in that there was the attempt to save the good people from chaos. But it's reflective of the negative side in practice.
Yeah, the laws represent the rules of...
There's one thing that's very interesting. In a completely free prison, not prison, but criminal society, there's a drive to be respectable that took over in Australia to the point where Australia hosted the games recently and has an opera house and has a high society and so forth. Of course, it's all pretty much society made of money rather than old families, except for the people that can trace their lineage back to the original prisoners, that were sent over to Australia. And there is a certain line of thinking that they're very proud of that. I am one of the original. I can trace my lineage all the way back there. But for the most part, I really was amused and dismayed by the fact that Australia, given the chance to be gloriously negative, and just wanted to be respectable, and ended up losing all evidence of negative polarity, at least on the surface, of course, much like the rest of the world. I mean, they became like the rest of the world rather than becoming a uniquely wicked and therefore free society. There's that underlying freedom that we don't want to look at. We who are respectable, we who are eminently respectable and would not think of doing anything wrong. But there is a freedom in being wicked and in acting out all of your dark side that you don't ever experience if you're simply trying for your highest and best. You see what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
We are coming up pretty close to our end. I want to emphasize a point. Like Gary was pointing out, folk love asks, is there hope? And to quote or to take a concept from one of my childhood heroes, Fred Rogers, also known as Mr. Rogers, is when you're looking at something terribly negative or that you, if you see something terribly negative going on, always look for the helpers because there's always people there helping.
Mm.
And like you mentioned, Carla, your friend who is trying their hardest to help, and someone very close to me coordinates a dog training program, works with prisoners to help them train dogs, that the dogs themselves need rehabilitation, and through helping to rehabilitate the dogs, the prisoners learn some compassion and responsibility, and it's positive for both dogs and
mm-hmm.
prisoners for the most part. And there's tons and tons of other just working specifically with prisoners, but working very hard to implement something that is more close to a restorative justice system than a retributive justice system. So there is hope, I think, and I think that if you look for it, there are people working very hard to make something more positive out of what we call a justice system.
Yes.
So you've been listening to LL Research's In the Now Q&A with Carla and crew. If you enjoyed the show, please visit our websites, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions. If you'd like to submit a question for us before the next show, please read the instructions on our page at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. Have a wonderful week, and we'll be here next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and we'll talk with you then.
And we love you all.
Planets turn and the